It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 Closet Busters. Guess what time it is? Yep, it's that time for the Coming Out Lounge once again, and it's time for every one of us to step out, step up, and step into living our powerful truth. Now, I got to be honest, we're going to go somewhat off script today. Most of the time when I'm entering into these podcasts, I've got an intro already written out, and I have stuff about the guests that I know deeply about, but I happen to be speaking at a local PFLAG chapter just a few weeks ago, and I had met my guest there, and I even met him, I believe, about a year ago when I was there speaking. And what impressed me about this young man, other than some stuff that will come out later as we get into the podcast, was there was a person talking about the struggle they were having with their child, and a really wonderful parent. And this person was in his probably early 40s, maybe mid 40s, talking about his teenage daughter who was coming through her own gender identity. And I remember my guest, who is Gino Daniels, delivering some really powerful wisdom to this parent. And for being in his early 20s and having come out not too long ago himself, I just marveled at how eloquent he spoke and how much he's embraced who he is in his identity. He does beautiful work as a makeup artist. He just recently graduated from makeup artistry school. And if you could see him in his other personas, you would understand exactly what I'm talking about. And if you want to see some of those personas, we'll have some pictures of him on the show page that you can see. And I just want to dive in and welcome this beautiful guy. His name is Gino Daniels. Welcome to the Coming Out Lounge podcast, Gino.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, absolutely. And obviously, I've alluded to that you have some personas. We're going to get into that in a minute. But I want to roll back a little bit because I know everybody has a coming out story. Not everybody that comes on the show, but I can only think of maybe one person so far I've had on the show that really didn't have a coming out story. Even my heterosexual allies that I've had on the show end up coming up with a really beautiful coming out story. But let's kind of roll back to, you know, your story. When did you really start to feel the inner self saying, okay, I'm not being who I am?
I like to tell people for the most part, I've always known I was gay. Mm-hmm. I think it became abundantly clear to me, though, when I was like 7 years old. And from there, growing up, it was kind of stages of denial within myself. And they started very small. And it was like, no, I'm not gay. And then it was, okay, maybe I'm bisexual. To, okay, I'm gay. And then those internal feelings started to become external, and I did the same pattern again. And then at the age of 18, when I was out of school, I reached a point in my life where I was so unhappy, and I knew deep down why. My family didn't know. They saw me suffering all the time, and I would, you know, drown myself in, you know, fantasy-based video games just because I wanted a better life, and for some reason video games offered me that life. But I reached a point where it wasn't enough. I couldn't do it anymore, and I broke down and started crying. My mom came to me and she asked me, what's wrong? Why are you unhappy all the time? Why are you always so alone? Why seclude yourself from everyone? And I was just like, I'm so unhappy. And she's like, I don't understand. Why can't you find someone? Why can't you find the right girl? And all this. And she kind of went in that route. And I just told her, but what if I don't want a girl? Mm. And then we both started crying. And she said, then that's okay. And that was my coming out. And it wasn't as horrible as I thought it would be. I didn't face the rejection I was so afraid of, and I'm very fortunate for that, but it's crazy to have so much fear that is placed on you from society and little things growing up, you know, like my family wasn't homophobic. They never said anything or did anything to make me think it was wrong. But I think all the, you know, gender roles and what's right and what's wrong for masculinity and femininity really played a part on my fear.
Sure. Sure. So this is an interesting space to be in because I can say that a lot of people don't have the same experience. And you know this, having been at PFLAG and shared your story and listened to other people share their stories. But it's interesting how we can hold ourselves as much hostage as others can hold ourselves hostage in our belief that we can't be who we are. And it sounds like, to some degree, this wasn't coming from the traditional familial place. It was coming from other spaces. So was the encounters of I can't be this coming more from just general classmates, outside society? What was really driving this feeling that I can't say this is who I am?
I think it's a combination of the TV I watched, the actions of other people, watching classmates, you know, calling people gay or fag or this or that, or you're this if you do this, you know, you can't play with that toy, you can't do that. I think it's a combination of all of that. And over time, throughout the years, you kind of pick up on that being not only gay, but being feminine as a guy is wrong.
All right. Yeah. And when you say feminine as a guy, when was that really like, when did you really grasp that for yourself? I mean, because I know I've interviewed lots of different people and it happens at lots of different ages. But for you, when is your earliest recollection of, okay, I'm a little more effeminate or I'm definitely not like the guy's guy?
It's hard to say because I feel like for so long, I was, trying just to be just masculine.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember. There was a certain point where I was like, oh, I'm being really feminine right now, or I am feminine. I think if anything, it was with the people I hung out in middle school or high school. I tended to, you know, want to be friends with the girls because when you're friends with the girls, especially the pretty ones, you're less likely to be made fun of.
Right. So I'm curious, and it's only because you just said this. Do you see yourself as feminine?
I do. And it's not until recently, like in the last couple of years, especially with me doing drag, that I've really embraced my feminine side. And
what does that mean to you? If you could describe your feminine, what does that look like? Other than when you're in drag, I mean, obviously then the personification, the gender identity begins to show up. When you are just Gino, one with yourself, which is all the time, I realize that, so I don't want to give the wrong impression. But when you're just being you, what tells you that I'm feminine?
I would say the way I act and sometimes talk, if I were talking about like physicalities, I think generally the things I love to, some of the things I love to do, would be categorized as feminine.
Like?
Well, makeup.
Sure.
Being a fan of musicals, of dances, fashion.
And so the reason I'm taking you down this route, Gino, is because isn't this amazing that this is what we have to hear as humans to really wrap our heads around, oh, okay, that's what feminine means, when in reality, if you liked theater, you enjoyed makeup, you enjoyed dancing, if it was just that's what you enjoyed, how different would our world be?
It'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be such a different space, you know? When I have posed that question to other people, whether it be from the stage or in this environment being on a podcast, it always kind of causes them to take pause, just kind of like it did you. It's like, okay, but wait, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
Because it's such a foreign concept, you know? It's so foreign to each and every one of us. Because part of our makeup as human beings is we need to have a label in order to wrap our head around what things are. Now, if I were to describe you to someone, I would probably have to use somewhat those words, effeminate, but I don't like that word. I don't like it because of the connotation it leaves. However, I would love to say he's got a really soft soul. He's got a very beautiful, gentle demeanor. And he's got a fierce side to him, too. I mean, I can see that in the little bit that I know you, which is very little. I want to make sure the audience realizes that we had, like, a brief conversation at the last PFLAG meeting. And then, you know, I said, hey, I'd love to have you do this and, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But it's so different to say this person has a really gentle soul. There's a soft side to him. And he also can be very fierce. But even in those words, I know for most people, the first thing they're going to, oh, so he's, you know, a really effeminate kind of guy. So I'm curious, when you get put in that label, whether you put it on yourself or whether others put it on you, is there fear associated with being considered an effeminate guy?
There isn't so much a fear. I feel like I'm more angry when people use it as a negative towards me, because I don't feel like it's a negative, and I don't feel like people should use it as a negative, especially people within our own community. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting because I had a very visceral reaction, and I've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before, to the first time that somebody called me a bear. It just, I mean, it made me crawl up the wall. Now, I have to admit to some degree that the reason it did that for me was I was about probably 60 pounds lighter than I am weight-wise right now. And I personally, my own just horrible, call it homophobia or, you know, derogatory stance or whatever it is, discriminatory way of being, I, at that point in my own journey as a gay man, associated a bear being someone who's really big and fat. I didn't go down the other route of somebody who's furry or, you know, very masculine, maybe wears a beard, da-da-da-da-da. I wasn't evolved in my own gay journey at that point in time. And it's been just recently that I've begun to embrace this somewhat because, okay, I don't really give a crap what anybody calls me. I am still Rick. That's who I am. And if that's how they see me, that's how they see me.
Yep.
But it seems to me from what you just described, that's also where you've gotten is, okay, that's who I am. That's how I am. And if that label is what it takes to help someone be able to identify with me without it being derogatory, then you're going to embrace it.
Exactly.
So what's been the biggest challenge for you being an effeminate man?
I think it's the way I'm perceived as far as the community goes, like, especially with dating, because everyone in the dating scene, I feel now, is only looking for someone who's masculine, who has masculine traits. And there's this whole, you know, mass versus femme thing going on right now.
Right.
And
why do you think that is? Why do you think that's become so? And I hear you, man. I totally get it because I hear it, you know, in the work I do, in the classrooms I speak in, you know, in other places that I speak. I hear this more so than I ever have in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious, what do you think's driving that classification that, oh, I need a real masculine guy?
I think it's the heteronormality of it a little bit. I also feel a lot of guys have adopted this feeling that feminine men aren't men, that they're, you know, ladylike. If they wanted a woman, they'd be with a woman kind of mentality. And I feel like that's a lot of the issue right there.
I agree with you. I also think what's interesting, and I see this in myself, is we often go and try to attract the thing we don't see in ourselves. And so these very hyper-masculine pursuits oftentimes means that the pursuer doesn't see that in himself. And so if I can attract that into my life, then I'm going to be more masculine because now I'm with this like butch daddy, whatever you want to call it, sort of person. And this isn't just in the homosexual world. I mean, this is something that I've seen studies done on, you know, women try to attract, you know, guys that remind them of their dad or, you know, it's very normal. Men try to attract women that, you know, probably remind them more of the perfect princess if that's what they're into. You know, it's just everything is... It's very interesting to watch this dynamic unfold. So one of the questions I've had, I guess at this point, only one other drag performer on the podcast, and it was a couple of years ago. He was older than you. I mean, I think he's in his mid-30s at this point. So I'm curious for you, in that world of who you are, number one, being who you are, But then you add into it the whole persona of being in drag and doing performances. What is the kind of person that you find yourself most attracted to?
I don't know if I'm just weird or what, but I have a pretty wide variety of people who I'm attracted to. But for me, I feel like one of the most important things is that they're, you know, a decent person, they're confident, mm-hmm. and they're not ignorant. Like, ignorance is so ugly and so unattractive to me.
That's a big statement right there, and I love that you said it, because ignorance is very unattractive. Whether it's ignorance about the LGBTQ community or ignorance around, wait, just because this guy may present as feminine doesn't necessarily mean that he's quote unquote all woman in the bedroom, so to speak. I remember, so the last performer, drag performer I had on the Coming Out Lounge, her drag name is Poppy Fields. His name is Christopher. I happened to be at one of the gay resorts in Palm Springs, and it was a clothing optional resort, and my husband and I were there with, you know, other guys, and we were just there having an enjoyable time. No, it wasn't a big sex hookup sort of thing. And I got into conversation with Christopher, and very much a more effeminate guy, but aspects of him were rather butch and very put together. And mm-hmm. one of the things that cracked me up the most about him as he was educating me on drag and then talking about the homophobia that gets often lobbed towards drag performers too, he goes, well, you know, all drag performers are very well hung. And I just, of course, was laughing like, insanely. But then the more I've talked to other drag performers, they're like, yeah, we're all pretty much very well hung. I'm like, okay, well, note to self that this is something that I need to be aware of so that I can share this with other people, that this seems to be, quote unquote, the truth. What I found most from Christopher was this really beautiful side of a human being who, he can be fun and he can be campy, but he can also be fun, and the camp doesn't have to necessarily be there. He's just a person, plain mm-hmm. and simple.
And I see so many queens struggle with this.
Yeah.
So many people facing other gays discriminating against them because they're a drag queen. They're like, oh, I don't want to date a drag queen, or, you know, that's disgusting, or whatever it may be. And they get so discouraged by it. And I'm like, look, if this is something you love to do, it's your passion, it's a way you get to express your feminine side, mm-hmm. don't give that up for anyone.
All right.
Don't think of it as a negative. Think of it as a positive. You're weeding out the people who are ignorant and shallow.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I can tell you that I don't know if they're still together, I'm going to assume, because I haven't seen anything otherwise. But I can tell you that Christopher / Poppy's boyfriend, partner, I know they weren't married, but he was a catch. He was a beautiful, and I'm not saying Christopher wasn't a beautiful guy, but his boyfriend was the personification of truly the masculine, you know, off the cover of REI magazine, you know, just mm-hmm. he was all guy, mm-hmm. all guy. And it was really beautiful to see them together as a couple, you know, because it's like, okay, this is proof positive that it takes all types to be in relationships and be together as couples. And I'm glad you shared with our listeners that, you know, you have a wide, you know, degree of attractions. And I think I'm going to generalize here, which I don't like to do too often, but I think when we can accept that for most of us, we do have a lot of attractions. Now, do we have types? Sure. You know, are there certain times, you know, for me, it's kind of interesting that one of the things that I'm most attracted to are smaller built guys, usually shorter guys, and yet my husband is none of those. But mm-hmm. it's something that I'm attracted to. However, what I'm attracted to in my husband is also part of the spectrum of what I'm attracted to. So let's kind of get into now your drag personas and how that all came about for you. Was that like something that happened like, okay, the closet door kicks open and then here's where Gino goes? Or was this something you were dabbling with pre-coming out?
No, actually, I started when I was about 21, so 3 years after I came out. And the way I started, basically, I was reaching a point in my life where I'm like, okay, Gino, what are you going to do with your life? Where do you want to go? Because I've always been artistic. I've loved art my whole life. I was an APR student all throughout middle and high school. Mm-hmm. And I love to model. I love to act. I love to do all these different things that let me express myself. And I was forced to make a decision, and I just couldn't make the decision of which path I'm going to choose, you know, only that one. And I started watching RuPaul's Drag Race. I actually started watching it with my mother. And I just fell in love with the artistry of drag. It blew me away. It completely captivated me. And I pretty much looked over to my mom. I'm like, I want to do this. This is something I want to do. And she's like, you'd be great at it. Do it. And so that's kind of how I made the decision that I wanted to be a drag queen.
Awesome. And how has that fulfilled your life, being able to express yourself in that manner?
It's changed me so much. I've become a more independent person, a more happy person. It's allowed me to embrace my feminine side and have it be revered rather than shunned and me keeping it locked up.
Mm-hmm. So the big question that I know many people from all walks of life, even within our own LGBTQ community, that often crosses people's minds is, oh, so that must mean he really wants to be a woman.
No. And that's the funny thing, because I still get that on a daily basis.
Yep.
And
that's why I asked the question, because I know so many of my drag friends. In fact, one of my best, well, I shouldn't say best friend, but one of my best drag acquaintances is Edie. And Edie is the mistress of Zumanity in Las Vegas. And we knew Edie before that thing ever happened. We met Edie in Provincetown where she performed. And then she did a couple of the gay cruises that we went on. And then shortly thereafter that, she ended up becoming the mistress of Zumanity. Yet Edie, and I'm not going to say his name because he prefers not to have that known too well known in public. He's just a guy's guy in a lot of different ways. It's pretty amazing. And I know he has no desire to be a woman. He just enjoys being able to express himself in this manner.
Yes, I get it all the time. Even on social media, people have been following me forever. I'll get it. And they'll be like, oh, so when are you transitioning or something of that nature? And I'm like, look, I have a beard every time I can. Like,
right.
I am always posting pictures of me as a guy. My name is still my boy name on Facebook. You think if I was transitioning or I wanted to transition, I would still have all that posted?
Right.
Probably not. But when I tell people, I answer them, I say, it's a way to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
As many people have said before, a drag queen is a gay man who has way too much fashion sense for one gender.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I've always lived by, or something I've always preached to people, because it's completely true.
That's awesome. So I'm curious, and I've never had this thought before, even though I, you know, like I said, Edie and, you know, then Poppy and, you know, those drag performers that I know. I'm just curious. So how does the trans community take you? Do they embrace you? Is that kind of on the fringes of their own phobia? Where do you fit into that world?
Honestly, I think the trans community is so small that it's more like we embrace them.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the most part, we are an umbrella term for transgender people.
Sure.
And often transgender people, this is kind of like they're bisexual for gay people when coming out. And they first come out, you know, as a drag king or drag queen.
Right.
And then they realize, you know what? At the end of the night, I don't want to take this off.
Right.
I want this to be me. I want this to be me forever. And I think that's a huge difference between drag queens and trans people, especially if they're both doing drag.
Yeah.
Is that, like, at the end of the night, I want to take that shit off. I want my heels off. I want my wig off. I want my lashes off. I want it all off.
Right.
I want to untuck. I just want to be, like, comfortable again.
Right.
But for them, that's who they are, and they want to stay that. And I think that's a huge difference. That's like one of the hugest difference.
You know, and that's a beautiful way to put it, you know, that I know in order to do what you do, there's the element of complete loving what you do. But it's no different than, you know, and this is probably not the greatest comparison, but when I used to teach spin class at the gym, I loved teaching spin class, not because of the spinning. I loved teaching spin class because I sang to my entire class. I'd sing to every freaking song that came on. Of course, you know, I had the perfect, like, gay, you know, spin, you know, CD, you know, to do this with. But
yeah,
it was because it was my time to be like the performer. I know within myself, I have a very nice sensibility to beat and to music and rhythm and timing. that it was truly a performance even as we were doing the class, because there would be music and I could anticipate, okay, at this beat, and then we're going to go up, you know, and we're going to hang here for 10 beats, and then we're going to go. I mean, and I was not saying those things out loud, but it was like my internal sensibility to this. Yet when I'm done with spin, I'm done. It's like, okay, let's go home. You know, we just did this. And I love the way you position that, because I think that helps really point out that there is a difference. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference, you know. And one of the things I've learned through PFLAG and being on several panels and speaking on speakers bureaus at PFLAG is to be very respectful of the questions that get asked. You know, what does it matter if Gina wants to do this? But the question, and it, you know, it all depends on, you know, the environment. I've seen some of my fellow trans people, and one person in particular who is a drag performer on PFLAG's Speakers Bureau, answer this question. But what does it matter what he wants to do in bed? What does it matter how he presents, you know? And I remember being in a class and didn't happen to have the drag performer on the panel at that point in time, but I made a comment about Edie, and the student asked, well, does she bottom or does she top? I said, you know what? Edie's a friend. And I know Edie outside of her makeup. And I don't really care. I don't. Yeah. It's not important to me. Now, if I wanted to date Edie, that's a whole different ballgame. Maybe it'd be like, okay, well, if she's a big old top and I'm a big old bottom, not insinuating that. And nor am I going to tell you what my preferences are, folks. But then it would be something to be having a discussion about. But this is where I think so many people, whether you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, you're a drag performer, the place they go is, oh, well, help me identify. So how are you sexually? What is it? Because this is another part of the whole labeling system that we go through, that suddenly, okay, this helps me understand you better. Now I get it.
Exactly. And that's one thing I tell people, and they're like, I don't get why people ask us who's the boy and who's the girl. I'm like, they're just beating around the bush asking you who's the bottom, who's the top.
Exactly.
But in reality, it doesn't really matter, because they don't need to know what you're doing in bed.
Well, right. It would be like asking a heterosexual couple, so does she ride you all the time, or you just take her doggy style every time?
Yeah, like it's irrelevant. Like,
yeah, it's completely irrelevant, you know? And it's like, okay, does she go down on you, or do you go down on her? You know, it's like, who cares? What does it matter?
Yeah.
What happens between those two people happens between those two people. So I have one last question for you before we wrap up here. And first of all, I've enjoyed this conversation, because you brought to light some stuff that, quite honestly, has never been brought into the podcast from this perspective. So
I'm glad.
Great stuff that you've been sharing here today. But if you could invite people to have a different perspective around trans, and I'm going to say trans because I know that's kind of, you guys tend to get thrown into that umbrella, but around trans and drag, what would be the thing that you wish people would just really embrace about the drag community?
They're humans with feelings too. We're not perverted. We're not doing this for sexual thrill. We are doing this because for drag queens, it's a way of self-expression. It's a way of taking back femininity for ourselves. And for trans people, it's just how they can be themselves, how they can express themselves fully and live their truth.
Well said. Very well said. So if you were to give anyone listening, and I can tell you without factual truth about this, Gino, but I can tell you based on where I know this podcast gets listened to, there's a lot of people listening to this podcast in areas like Thailand, India, and South Africa, some of the European countries. And some of those places I know are highly populated with very, very effeminate, submissive type of men. And I'm not saying that to be derogatory. I'm just saying what I know from having done a lot of work in this arena. If someone is listening from that perspective and they know within their hearts that part of who they are is an effeminate man and they just want to be who they are, or maybe they want to express themselves through the art of drag, what would be the advice you'd love to give them about their journey?
Embrace it. Don't let it cripple you. Don't hesitate. Take it and run with it. It will free you. It really will. It will free you. You'll not only feel happier, but if you don't love yourself, it'll help you on that path of loving yourself.
Awesome. Very well said. And I'm curious, because we haven't had a chance to really get into the depth of this, so where can people see you perform? When do you perform? Is there any particular days and dates that are typical, or is it just whenever you get a gig?
Right now, I do have a show. It's once a month. It's in Temecula. It's every last Sunday of the month.
Awesome.
And it's Epic Rollertainment. But for right now, I could be getting gigs elsewhere. It's awesome. Kind of up in the air.
We hope that happens for you, so that'd be awesome. So for those of you who have no idea where Temecula is, we taped this podcast in Southern California, and Temecula is a beautiful community, very close to Southern California wine country. It is the Southern California wine country, partway between Los Angeles and San Diego. We will have all the stuff you need to connect with Gino on the show page here, so that you can find out where he's doing his thing and see some beautiful pictures of him in his essence, true essence, as both Gino and his characters. So we didn't talk about that. So do you have a drag performance name you'd love to leave everybody with, so they get a sense of who you really are when the makeup and everything is on?
Yes, my drag name is Capria Lucia. Mm. It's a name that I got from my mom, and it's a name that she was planning on giving her firstborn child. Unfortunately, she lost her at her third trimester, but I took the name, changed it a little bit to make it my own, so that way I feel like she gets to live on through me and my persona.
That's awesome. Just awesome. Well, I want to tell you how much I really appreciate you being here. I'm so glad we connected, and I'm even more glad that I just took that step to say, hey, Gino, I'd love to have you be on the podcast. You've been a wonderful guest today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. And if you enjoyed what we've been talking about, you've learned something from this, you want to share this with someone, some of the best ways you can share the podcast and the Coming Out Lounge is to do ratings and reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you're listening to us from. We always appreciate the love and the cuddles that people can give, because that's part of how we get this podcast seen and heard in other places. And also, just feel free to share it, you know, subscribe and share what you hear. There's always stuff up on Facebook and Twitter about what we're doing. So just retweet or do any of those lovely social media things that we do. And with that, I'm going to keep it short and sweet tonight and say, you know what, if you're struggling with anything at all that you find to be a challenge in your coming out journey, whether it's accepting yourself as an effeminate gay man, or you're trying to find your way of just stepping into saying, you know what, I'm a married person and I'm coming out of the closet, just take a moment and consider hitting me up and doing one of the one-on-one sessions that I offer on a numerous amount of topics. Everything from having that difficult conversation to coming out at work to how do you do this thing called gay sex? How do we do it? I work with people on all sorts of subjects, so take a look at the opportunities there. If you're on the website listening to this, click on the one-on-one sessions right there on the show page, and you'll be directed right into where I can do some one-on-one work with you. And with that, I'm going to say we appreciate you. We love you. We're so glad that you join us each and every week here on the Coming Out Lounge. And with that, I'm going to tell you once again to step out, step up, and step into living your powerful truth each and every moment, each and every day of your life. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, and I will catch you in just another week. Take care. Hey, hey, closet dwellers. We are wrapping up another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. But before we go into complete wrap up, I wanted to let you know that we are just a couple of episodes away from the 100th episode of the Coming Out Lounge. And I want to say thank you very much for being part of our journey. That episode is going to be airing on September the 7th. So dial in for sure on that date. We've got a very special guest, Mr. Bruce Vilanch. He's a funny guy. He's an actor. He's an occasional writer, comedian, and he also says he's a sex surrogate. Don't know about that, but I can tell you, you are truly in for a great show. He's been part of co-authoring the Academy Awards, and he is one of the most outspoken advocates for LGBT rights. I had a wonderful time with him when we recorded the episode, and I can't wait to share that with you. So once again, thank you for
making us what we are today. We will be celebrating that 100th episode again on September the 7th. Look forward to having you join us on that day. And until then, never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your most powerful truth as the beautiful gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender person that you are. Take care.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.